Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. So, Theresa May is still in power for the time being. We have not yet reached the 48 letters required for a confidence vote. And until that happens, Theresa May is busy trying to win support for her deal. Today, she has given a speech to the CBI, where she's told businesses that actually this is a great offer for them because under her deal, it will allow them to control immigration and bring in new workers from countries outside of the EU. Here's a clip now.
It will no longer be the case that EU nationals, regardless of the skills or experience they have to offer, can jump the queue ahead of engineers from Sydney or software developers from Delhi. Instead of a system based on where a person is from, we will have one that is built around the talents and skills a person has to offer.
So Fraser, is this a winning pitch?
This is the best argument for her deal, perhaps the only good argument for her deal. It will not do a whole bunch of things that people wanted from Brexit, but it will bring back control over the borders. What might that mean? She's finally beginning to give a decent answer here. I mean, Theresa May has usually been sort of staggeringly immigrant unfriendly over her career as Home Secretary and Prime Minister, to my personal dismay and the dismay of many more globally minded Tories. But here she is in front of the CBI saying, look, it's not fair, but they skipped the queue. If you want to get some Indian computer programmers, you can do this. So there's no doubt that this is a definite benefit for business. But mind you, she doesn't need to sell this audience. The CBI is one of the most enthusiastically pro-Remain organisations out there. It was probably more pro-Remain than the Remain campaign. And right now, it just sort of sees itself in being in a battle with the Rees-Mogg and the Brexiteers. So anything they don't want, the CBI wants. So bizarrely, the CBI has gone from being the Remain at all costs to being, let's back Theresa May's deal. So she has worked this out. So she's going to the CBI saying, let's form an alliance. I need to get my deal through Parliament, and I want you, the CBI, to say that business also wants this deal to go through Parliament.
Yes, James, the CBI has been accused in the past of being, a mouthpiece of Brussels, and is loathed amongst Eurosceptic circles. She's done a Sky interview to pitch this, and now she's gone to the CBI. Is she sending this message here? This is very much a deal for those on the Remain side rather than those on the Brexit side.
I think there's a problem, as you say, which is, the CBI were very in the Remain campaign. They've actually gone to that audience. I also think one of the things we've learned from the Scottish referendum in 2014, the 2016 EU referendum, is that the kind of business doesn't carry the same weight with voters that it once used to. There used to be a time when, if you could, pre-crash, 100 business leaders writing letters to newspapers did seem to have an effect on public opinion. I think one of the things we've seen is it doesn't. I think Theresa May also needs to find, I think at the moment, Downing Street's kind of main argument for this deal seems to be, isn't Theresa May's personal resilience remarkable? Now, in many ways it is. She just keeps going, and that is in and of itself praiseworthy. But that is not an argument for the deal per se. I mean, that is the problem, which is number 10's argument seems to be, look at Theresa May still going, rather than this is why this deal is a good thing for the country.
Now, another argument Theresa May has put forward for her deal on Sunday in an interview with Sophie Ridge on Sky News was that if her MPs and the plotters move to oust her, so that even if she leaves, it's not going to make it any easier to get a Brexit deal through because a new leader won't fix that and the parliamentary arithmetic won't change. Fraser, is this a convincing argument?
I'm afraid to say it is. I mean, what is keeping her in power right now is not her great grip of the party, it's not the popularity of her deal. It is the staggering absence of any single alternative proposal. We've got lots of Tories moaning, lots of them saying, oh, there must be a better way of doing it, but nobody really who's able to rally people around him or her, nobody coming up with a rival plan. I mean, we hear, I guess, through James Forsyth's brilliant leaks from Cabinet, that we know that the James Forsyth app, as Theresa May called it, which leaks everything set in a parliament, that people around the table do have some interesting ideas. I think that Andrea Leadsom's idea of a negotiated no deal sounds quite interesting, whereby we would pay them to keep on going for about 2 years and then moving into world trade Brexit. But there are lots of other varieties, there are lots of better alternatives to this awful plan. But unless her rivals can agree on one of them, then it will pass. So I think that I've actually been quite struck since the agreement of the deal how a number 10 that was so useless in negotiations with the EU has finally got to become a lot more effective and quicker moving when it comes to selling the results of his failure to get a deal with the EU. This weekend, you know, we ran on the website to Stuart Pike's 40 horrors behind her deal. And I mean, Katie, you're on duty and editing duty on Saturday, and by 5 o'clock, number 10 were calling us back saying, look, our lawyers have written 40 responses to this. And it was quite a good piece, and we put it online. But there's now this Rolls Royce that we civil service that we hear about, which was not really in evidence when it came to getting a good deal out of Brussels, does seem to be rolling right now. So she quite right, she should be on LBC, she should be doing these 40 responses, she should be talking to the CBI. And then after this, she should be talking about what she's going to do with all the money she's going to save, because that's the other thing about her deal. We're going to go from 10 billion a year to less than 1 billion a year in net payments to Brussels. There'll be other ways of spending the money. She should be spelling it out soon. So I am quite impressed by the methods at which she's playing hardball with the party in the way that she failed to play hardball with Brussels.
James, if you look at those divided Brexiteers, it was interesting over the weekend because on one hand you have Steve Baker, arch-Brexiteer, leads a lot of the efforts in the European Research Group of Eurosceptic backbenchers. And he's been saying for some time that he thinks the number of letters is probably over 50. That doesn't quite seem to be the case. Then you have Dominic Raab and a few other Brexiteers who don't like the deal. I mean, Dominic Raab has quit over it, quit as Brexit secretary, but he took to the Andrew Marr show and he said that despite this, he had no plans to write a letter. He frowned upon efforts by his Eurosceptic colleagues to write letters to try and bring about this vote. And if there was a vote, he would vote for the Prime Minister. He would say he had confidence. Now, obviously, it is a secret ballot. We don't know what Dominic Raab would really do. But is the problem that the Brexiteers can't, they might be able to agree that they don't like this deal, but they can't agree how to get Theresa May to change her mind?
I think there is a fundamental problem here, which is that they can't agree. So first of all, on Dominic Raab, I think, you know, the cynic in me, when I heard him say that, for, you know, he who wields the knife doesn't wear the crown, right? He knows that if he basically, and it would make it look like it was all about leadership, which I genuinely don't think it is for him, if he said, oh yes, actually, and I now think we should get rid of her. I mean, there is at some point, as Andrew Bowen Law said almost 100 years ago, you know, the Prime Minister chooses the policy and if the party wants a different policy, it needs to choose a different Prime Minister. I mean, there is a truth to that. I think the problem for the Brexiteer wing of the party is, I think in the privacy of the ballot box, quite a lot of people would vote no confidence in her if they thought a coronation could be arranged swiftly. Because changing the leader is one thing. Having a long leadership contest at this moment in our country's history would be quite another. The problem is, there is no sign that you could arrange a coronation. You know, Steve Baker was reduced on Friday to the ridiculous suggestion that the Brexiteers should kind of draw lots, essentially, to choose who their candidate is. I mean, that is the problem. And I think this is the issue as well, which is, you know, Theresa May says that there isn't, you know, not a new leader wouldn't solve all these problems, right? What I think is the particular chutzpah of that line is, part of the problems are what she has signed up to at previous points in the Brexit process, which point the European Commission will say, hang on a second, you signed up to a December joint report which says this. You know, and that is the issue here. And I think there is a fundamental question of time now in terms of renegotiating. One question, though, which remains to me, is how does number 10 plan to get this deal through Parliament, right? The parliamentary arithmetic keeps getting more and more difficult for her. The DUP aren't going to abstain. They're going to vote against. They're quite clear about that. You've got Graham Stringer, another Labour Brexiteer, saying, well, actually, I wouldn't vote for this deal because I don't think it matches up to the referendum result. So where are these votes? And you've obviously got this ERG rebellion, and then you've got the kind of Joe Johnson rebellion on the other side. So where are the votes coming from? And I think that Theresa May will need to do something dramatic if she is to find a way to get the votes.
You know, James, I'm tempted to agree with you there, but my feeling is that she probably would get it through. And I'll tell you why. Not because I can see a route that you can't, but because I think how many times over the last few years I have thought something was impossible because I couldn't see a route for it happening. For example, in 2015, I couldn't see how David Cameron would win a majority because I couldn't see which constituencies would turn Tory that needed to. Having been to some of these places, I thought there was no chance of it. I was wrong. Then when Donald Trump was elected, you say, OK, if he's going to win now, he needs to take this state and that state, and there is no route for him to do so. And there turned out to be a route. So I think things have got a habit of sort of materialising. And that I always like to think that it's using the political physics of Nicholas Soames' bottom. Have I told you this theory before? Mm-hmm. Right. You'll see with Nicholas Soames, he always sits on the same bench in Parliament. It was normally quite a popular seat. And when he starts to sit down, there is no space. He points his bottom to a non-existent space and starts to lower himself. But by the time his bottom actually hits leather, a space magically appears. So he's worked out that in politics, even if there seems to be no physical way for something to happen, quite often at the last minute, people can move their positions and a space magically appears. So I think that the political physics of Nicholas Soames' bottom might work in Theresa May's favour.
Well, there is an optimistic tale to end on for Theresa May. Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, James.